to another episode of Feral and Fabulous. Today, we have a fantastic guest and a lady that I have known for, we're going to figure that out. I'm not sure exactly how long it is, but a long, long time, the fabulous Jen Bailey with Legacy Mutual Mortgage. And I'm just, like I said, I've got so many questions and I'm excited to hear the answers because we're going to talk a lot about mortgages. We're going to talk about, you know, lending and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I wanted to kind of get started with, which is something I'm super curious about, is I understand that you used to be a mortgage fraud investigator. And so tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. But yeah, so going back to investigating mortgage fraud, I did it 2008 to 2014.
Wow. Okay. I didn't even realize it was that long. Okay.
Yeah, for a long time. Okay. And if you remember the 2008 financial crisis.
No, I'm still traumatized by it. No, I not only remember it, I literally still have nightmares about it. Yeah.
I bet, because you were in real estate and it was a wild time.
It was.
It kept me really busy.
Yeah, it was the Wild Wild West.
It was. So basically the way it worked was, so PMI companies, private mortgage insurance companies, they were our client.
Okay.
They hired us because if I could find mortgage fraud, then they wouldn't have to pay the claim to the lender when someone defaulted on a mortgage. So if someone defaulted on a mortgage and they had committed mortgage fraud, if anyone in the transaction, the realtor, the title rep, the appraiser, the loan officer, anyone committed mortgage fraud, if I found the fraud, the PMI company wouldn't have to pay the claim. However, my secondary client was the FBI because they would want to then go prosecute. So they would take all my reports and first they'd go to the PMI company and then we'd turn them over to the FBI and then they would decide who to prosecute. And then I'd have to cross-reference who was like the repeat offenders who would commit the most mortgage fraud.
Yeah.
Oh man, it was the most interesting job on the planet.
Gosh. No. That definitely, like I said, it sounds like, I mean, was it nerve-wracking? Was it as nerve-wracking as it sounds or was it just kind of like just another day in the business?
I mean, in the beginning, it was never nerve-wracking. It was more like a combination of exciting and interesting. It was very interesting, but really sad.
Yeah.
Because I'd have to interview everyone involved in the transaction. And usually the home buyer has lost the home. They didn't know fraud was committed. They didn't know they couldn't afford the mortgage payment.
Oh,
the loan
officer
was the main offender.
Okay.
Almost always.
Really? That was my next question is, in a mortgage fraud situation, who is the typical offender?
Almost always the loan officer. Now, sometimes it would be the appraiser. Sometimes, you know, the realtor would be in cahoots with the buyer or doing some things on their own.
Okay.
But
that's not typical.
Yeah, it's not typical.
Okay.
I mean, home buyers, there'd be some investment scammer fraud schemes. There'd be occupancy fraud.
Okay.
Occupancy fraud is back on the rise right now.
Is it? Really? That's so interesting. And are they doing it when you say occupancy fraud? Maybe if you could explain that, because I'm not sure everybody even understands I know what that is, but I'm not sure everybody knows.
Right. So really, if you're getting a home loan and it's a primary residence, the loan is so much more beautiful. Your interest rate's lower, your down payment requirement's lower, like all the things are better.
Yes.
If you're buying a vacation home or an investment property, it's a more expensive, higher down payment, right? So plenty of people, this is actually pretty common, will say they're buying a primary and it's really going to be a rental.
Right.
And so what'll happen is post-closing, there's random quality control audits and they'll go find out if the person moved in.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
If I have someone that I think is, you know, maybe not being the most forthcoming, I get to bring up my background and say, hey, just in case you're not aware, here's how things may shake out, right? Even if you make your mortgage payments, there's a possibility for a random audit. So I just want to make sure you plan to move in within 60 days.
Right.
If not, let's change your loan to a different loan type.
Absolutely. And you know what I've had happen over the years, and I'd be curious to see what you say about it. I've had clients that actually absolutely not intending to do mortgage fraud, but they did intend to buy the property and rehab it before they moved in. Meaning they were moving in, but what they didn't realize is the rehab took longer than what they had originally anticipated. Or you know what happens is once they start the rehab, then they're like, oh, and I think I'll add this, and then I think I'll do this. And then it's like, okay, so instead of moving in, because I think a lot of times they have to move in within 60 days, right?
Right, yeah.
So let's just say fast forward to it's like maybe 115 days, and they're still planning to move in, but they're not done with the rehab. What is that situation? And what happens if a mortgage company, let's say they go out there and they drive by and they're doing the check to say, okay, at day 95, they should be living there by now and they're not. What happens then? If it's a legitimate situation that they're truly going to be moving in, but they just haven't finished the rehab yet.
I say the best thing they can do is make sure they change their driver's license over to the new home address.
Okay.
Get the utilities in their name at that address. Like, make it Perfect. Very clear that that's that, their intention.
The intent is there. Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
And if they're investigated, make the case. Like, say, hey, look, it was supposed to take 60 days. It took, 120 or whatever.
Absolutely.
Because there's common sense involved in investigating mortgage fraud. And if it's not clear intent to commit fraud, then you're probably going to be fine.
That's what I kind of thought. And in the situation that I was talking about, it ended up being just fine. They did go by and they did see, I don't remember the exact dates on it, but it was beyond the 60 days of when they were supposed to be. And I think this is many years ago, but that's when I realized, oh, well, they really do go check. Yeah. You know what I mean? They They'll really check. Do follow up. And so it became a thing in my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, when they say that, they really mean it.
Right. And that one's really common, but that one's not as big of a deal as some mortgage fraud. I mean, the biggest mortgage fraud is when people are doing like multiple investment property schemes.
Yes.
Or identity theft. I mean, I was investigating fraud and there were people that were dead and they did this combined identity theft where you take someone who died, like social, with someone else's birthday.
And take a mortgage out in their name?
Yeah, and you create a new identity. So, like, there's those that are way more intentional of a fraud, right? And then...
Oh, my gosh. So, I didn't realize that there was that much, like, intent going on out there where that they obvious from the get-go, they intended to do mortgage fraud.
Oh, yeah. That was most of them. I mean, I found mortgage fraud, Kim, in, like, 85 to 90% of the files I investigated. Which is insane. Now, that doesn't mean 85 to 95% of the loans that were done. That's those that have defaulted.
I understand.
Missed a payment.
Yes.
Then it goes to me to investigate.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many of those obviously were maybe there were mortgage fraud on that they just didn't default? So if they didn't default, then you're not going to have as likelihood a chance of getting caught, right?
Right, because those are only, then you'd have to be picked up for a random quality control audit.
Which does happen.
Which does happen,
I know, but... Wow. I've already learned something. That's so interesting.
It was super interesting. The most interesting one I did, I can't say who it was because this is a well-known person, but he was the head of a private U.S. military force, and he was a repeat offender, lots of mortgage fraud. And
oh my gosh.
I was talking to Blake about it, my husband. Yeah. And he was like, you've got to be kidding me. And so there was some news coverage, so news coverage had started that there was going to be an investigation into the mortgage fraud, and it just kind of dissipated.
Funny.
I wonder whatever happened.
Funny how sometimes things just float off into space or whatever.
If you've got the right dirt on certain people, things might just disappear.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I had a lot of very, very well-known people in the industry and also not in the industry in terms of just being in real estate that that were... committing mortgage fraud. But most of my clients, to be honest, because I was investigating mortgage fraud across the whole country, I had a lot in California and a lot in Florida. Like, those were the worst. I even had a friend that was a loan officer in Florida. I was like, hey, I'm investigating mortgage fraud. Like, be careful.
Yeah.
And he was a shady. I mean, I'm sure he committed fraud. He's just that personality of like,
oh, wow.
He was in Miami.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So California and Florida being big offenders?
Huge. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. How about Texas? Where do we fall?
There was plenty of mortgage fraud in Texas.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact lineup, but I know California and Florida were the biggest offenders.
Sure.
But because of the size of Texas,
sure.
Overall, we're just going to have a lot here too, just because we have a lot in real estate. But there was plenty of fraud here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Thank goodness.
Sadly, there's plenty to go around everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Besides the one you already gave us, any other really like crazy stories in mortgage fraud that like were just outside the box, like a little different and completely surprised you? Because it sounds like after you did it a while, you weren't that surprised anymore.
No.
But was there ever a deal that came along that you're like, what the heck?
Just people that are dumb. That's like
dumb criminals,
like loan officers that were dumb that would, let's say, fake a pay stub. But they wouldn't calculate taxes correctly. So all I'd have to do is bring out a calculator.
They were dumb criminals.
Dumb criminals.
Okay.
I'm like, you're a loan officer. You can math. At least if you're going to commit fraud. Do the right
math. The math is still not mathing. That is your job to do the math on this transaction. And obviously, if you're going to try and do mortgage fraud, at least get the math right.
Right. Sometimes I would just find it by bringing out my calculator and adding up numbers on a pay stub or a bank statement and be like, why would you be this lazy?
There's no way. Exactly. There's no way that the pay stub looked like this because they couldn't have calculated it correctly.
Right. Missing FICA. I mean, you're missing Social Security taxes. Like, that's on all the pay stubs.
Or a handwritten pay stub.
Right.
A handwritten pay stub that the numbers don't match up. So. Yeah.
And another really common one that people do on accident, buyers do on accident, is the gift versus a loan from family for the down payment. It has to be a gift.
Of course.
But a lot of people will tell me, oh, my parents will give me a loan. And I'll say, wait a minute. You can't say loan. It can't be a loan. It's got to be a gift. No intent to repay. And they're like, oh. So, and they just didn't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you don't have a loan officer telling you like, hey, this, you can't repay it or your intent can't be to repay this.
Exactly.
That technically
Sorry, mom and dad.
I know.
I am not allowed to pay you back.
Sorry,
so
this is
psych.
A real gift.
Exactly. Yeah. So psych. Uh-huh. What you thought you were lending me, turns out I've just got it for good.
Yep. Exactly.
Cool.
So yeah, that's the most common one. Really lots of interesting stories. It's been a while. I mean, 2014 to now. I mean, it's hard to remember.
I know. That's so true. So let's fast forward to what happened to transition you from being a mortgage fraud investigator into getting into the real estate industry?
That's a very good question.
As a mortgage officer.
Yeah. When I got out of investigating mortgage fraud, it's because I got pregnant and I wanted to be home.
Okay.
Have a couple babies.
Yeah,
so we had
sure.
two kids just back to back. They're super close in age.
Yeah.
And then once I got my youngest to 2 years old, so basically I took 3 years off work.
Okay, great.
I was like, I love my children, but I miss working.
Yes,
I'm
I
not
understand.
Meant to stay
yes,
home.
Yes.
In the meantime, while I was staying home with the kiddos, my husband and I started a motorcycle apparel company, which was so much fun. So it was something that I got to do with him.
I do recall that. Yes. I mean, you would do the boots and all that kind of stuff.
Boots. Right?
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, Moto Bailey. And we had no idea what it was going to turn into, but it turned into this huge international company where most of our clients were like in Australia and Europe and
that's so cool.
in magazines all over the world. And it blew up, which
that's
was
awesome.
Fun.
Yes.
It was fun because we both rode bikes. And so we got to just be integrated into that culture. There was a really good culture in New Braunfels I even had some girls that would ride with me.
Wow.
Which is kind of hard to find.
Yes. One of the ladies on my team who Renee Penner, is a Harley rider. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that about her.
Yeah, I know, right? Crazy.
Oh, crazy. So we did that. And then when my husband decided, we had been running the motorcycle business enough. He wanted to go try something different. I had found this really cool job basically in Silicon Valley as a startup, as a business, like being in the beginning of the business. And he was like, yes, I want to go to, he called it Silicon Valley School to learn that world because he's a serial entrepreneur. My husband,
loves
business.
Yeah.
So he went and he got in at the beginning of this company. He was like one of the first five employees and helped, which was Super Home Warranty into.
I do. Yeah. No, absolutely. I remember that. Bam,
and it got
that's
huge.
Been a minute ago.
It became like, it was like, if not still is, it became the largest home warranty company in the country.
Wow.
Now he built up the Texas region and then after.
What year was that?
Gosh, Kim, I don't know.
I know. I'm
so hard. It's so hard to remember back the years. He hasn't done it for like 6 years.
Now. Okay.
So it was, and he worked there for like 4 or 5.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So his whole goal was to build it to be this really great business and to really go to the Silicon Valley school and learn because he knew he wanted to create his own separate Silicon Valley style tech business. So he went to go basically learn.
Okay.
And so when he did that, he was in real estate.
Right.
They didn't know when they started the company, this was going to be really adjacent as much as it is to real estate.
Right.
And then he was going to be working with realtors.
Right.
And
right.
so that's why that's why I transitioned because, he started it and then he worked with you and your whole team for years.
Yeah.
I was like, then when I wanted to go back to work, he was like, you used to do mortgage fraud. What if you were a loan officer? It was his idea.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
Was like, you should do this. So, and I didn't. I hadn't thought about it before because in my head, loan officers were terrible people.
Right. No, because of the background that you had, I'd have been terrified to go in that business as well. Because
I was like, they're slimy and they commit fraud.
Right.
And
because that's all that you dealt with. Yes. You hadn't really had a lot of exposure to really good ones.
No, it was all the bad ones. I was like, these poor home buyers are losing their homes because loan officers suck. But then
that,
I was like,
to me, was a great foundation for you to see what not to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like you learn by going, I ain't doing that. I'm not doing that.
Yep.
So you've learned all the things not to do so that you would be able to do the things you should do very well.
Right. And that was after enough drinks on the porch with my husband, we were like, wait a minute. You could be a really great loan officer and help people and guide them and be a handholder. And just, so I'm obsessed with making sure people know the numbers when they're buying a house, and we work backwards from their goals.
Yeah.
And if the house doesn't hit their goals, then I'm going to make sure you understand what these numbers are. So I went full tilt opposite of what a normal loan officer does.
Yes.
To just really take care of the home buyer, make sure they don't end up in a bad situation. And it worked out really well.
That's awesome. Well, no, absolutely. I mean, obviously you've had such huge success as a loan officer. And so tell me now, fast forward to today, 2026, what would you say to buyers out there that are looking to buy a home? Like, what kind of products are out there? Because I know that one of the things you're really good at is fitting the product to the buyer, to the client, and figuring out what best suits their needs. Because what is good for Sue Smith is not necessarily going to be what's good for, you know, Frank Jones or whatever. And so how do you go about doing that? And, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
Good question. So I am very, I have a systematic process, and I have certain questions the clients have to answer when I visit with them. So when I first get the initial client introduction, I'm asking these questions. Then again, I'm asking them again during our pre-approval meeting. But the questions are, what is your monthly payment goal? What is the max you're willing to pay for the perfect house? What is your out-of-pocket goal? And what's the max out-of-pocket goal? Those four and your timeline. So like those five things alone tell me a lot about this person.
Okay.
Is it going to be a long-term house, short-term? So once I understand their goals, then I know what to put them in.
Right.
And they apply, and then I see, okay, you qualify for, say, these three.
Right.
Here are the pros and cons.
Right.
And I explain it to them, and I let them, ultimately it's their money, I let them make the choice, but I guide them by saying, you told me you wanted this. This is the product and the price point that helps you fit the goals. But you can also do these other things. Let's talk about pros and cons. What do you want to do? So it's very catered to each individual person.
I love that.
It's not a normal, you go to
one
a big bank, you get a letter, and there's no guidance.
Don't even get me started on the one size fits all mortgage. You know, some of the big guys, I mean, it makes me crazy because I feel like clients, they see an ad for Wells Fargo. I'm not to throw them under the bus, but I'm just as a big box lender. I just feel like that they don't even know. They just log on and then they get whatever they get, and they have no understanding of whether that particular product fits their needs specifically. Yeah. It's just, here's a loan.
I know.
Boom. This is, you know, you just get what you get, and you don't get any say-so, and you don't have any input into, you know, what would maybe be best.
Right. And these big banks, they're great at checking and savings and certain products that they do. But
mortgages,
oh,
no, absolutely. They all have a role to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when it comes to mortgages, I feel like that one-on-one relationship rather than just some unknown person behind the curtain, I think is just a better, you know, better deal.
Oh, yeah. And one of the other things I added years ago for all of my clients that I now do, I go well beyond the normal stuff. So I help them protest property taxes every year, file homestead and VA disability exemptions, no lending fee refinances, shop homeowners insurance, redo it, reshop it every year. So initially buying the house, helping them save as much as possible when they do that, right?
Sure.
And I get to shop interest rate, which
is
one of my
favorite
parts of my
job. I know. I love that.
I love being able to do that because we're a wholesale lender, so it's such a cool part.
Can you explain real quick, just because for the audience, what does a wholesale lender mean?
Yeah, so good question. People get real confused because there's so many different types of lenders. You got like big banks and credit unions kind of in one bucket, and they only do limited things and they lend their own money and they have, you know, only their interest rate, right? And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have a broker who shops rate for you, which is cool, but they can't control your loan. They don't do your loan. They send it to someone else. So it's out of their hands whether you hit closing dates, how the underwriters are. It's completely out of their hands.
Sure.
And they charge a broker fee. So you're paying 2-2.5%.
Sure.
So we're in the middle, what I call the best of both worlds, where we do everything in-house from beginning to end, but I still get to shop interest rate because we have all these banks and investors on the back end, like Chase and Wells Fargo or some of ours. We have several, even the big banks. And so we get to shop rate for them. And my system filters it by the lowest rates. And they have like 15 rates to choose from. And I put them into my nerdy spreadsheet and I walk the clients through.
I love that.
You can do this or this. You can have a higher rate and low fees or a really low rate and high fees or be somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
It's your choice.
Yeah.
And I walk them through it and give them the power to make the decision. And I guide them to, hey, these are the goals you told me in the beginning.
Oh, that's great.
Here's the one that hits your goal. Do you want to do that or something different, right? So anyway, that's how we're structured.
Perfect.
Which is one of the reasons I love working at our company.
Yeah.
But also another reason I love Legacy is that I am friends with the owners. If you're friends with the owners and the underwriters and the whole operations team, you can get things done that others can't. Like in a pinch, like we've had some recently where they're miracle closings. And it has to do with having that good relationship with everyone. They're willing to work the late hours to get
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and like I said, you pulled off a feat I'm not sure anybody else could have pulled off. That's for darn sure.
I know. I was like, that was like 9 business days.
I think it was 9 business days.
Yeah, on a pretty complicated
over the holidays.
Situation.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, yeah. A miracle.
It was so happy.
Like it was a miracle on 34th Street.
I know.
So
it was a Christmas miracle.
It was a Christmas miracle. I love a Christmas miracle. Yeah. So.
And I can't take credit for it. It was my team. Like we just have that good of a team. I mean, now I'm the partner. So Josh Sigmund and Adam Hughes are my partners.
Okay.
And we run the branch together and we have 20, we might be up to 30 now, team members.
Wow.
And it's one of the largest in Central Texas.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that big.
It is. And
okay.
They are rock stars, Kim. I'm telling you, we have only A players. That is every meeting that we have. It's if you're not an A player and you don't have these values, you don't stay.
Yeah.
And we did have to do, unfortunately, some layoffs. We had to let some people go that were like B players.
Sure.
But one of the benefits to having this A player team is that everyone is just
on their
solid.
Game. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's amazing.
It's taken a long time to get here.
No. But much deserved to be where you're at right now. So that's super, super exciting and looking forward to a great 2026. So tell me, I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, what do you think is going to happen with the mortgage rate this year? I know, you know, we've got a lot of year left. So any predictions on that? I'm going to put you in the hot seat.
I like it. I like the hot seat. Predictions are hard because we don't have a crystal ball and it's so foggy right now. It's a weird time.
Isn't it? Like you can't, it's opaque. You can't even see
really
through
is.
It. Yeah.
It really is.
I agree.
Mean, my prediction could be way off, but here's what I would say. I pay really close attention to it. I follow people a lot smarter than me, economists that are trying to do predictions themselves based on large sets of data.
Sure.
We've come a long way. We were in the mid sevens. We're down to 6. You know what I mean?
I know.
So we've come a long way.
Oh my gosh. I'm so happy about that too.
Me too. Sevens were rough. Oh, I even had some people in the eights. That was sad.
Yeah,
but anyway.
No. Yeah.
So it's come down a lot. The average interest rate over 50 years is 7.5. So we are below average. That's a win.
Absolutely.
Right?
I totally agree with that.
But those of us that got to see the teaser rates in COVID are a bit spoiled and we want to see them again. I don't think we'll see them again because I think inflation will get out of control, but I do think we'll see rates come down.
Okay, good.
So one of the bigger things that's coming down the line is Powell, our current Fed president, is getting out of there this year.
I know, and I can't wait to wave goodbye. I can't wait to see him in the rearview mirror.
Me too. I can't wait. I've been dying.
I'm not mad about that.
Not mad. And it depends. We'll see who replaces him. And, you know, it's a vote amongst, you know, multiple Fed members that are involved. But what's interesting is that most people who aren't living and breathing this all day think that mortgage rates are tied to the Fed. And they're really not. They're kind of loosely related.
Yes, yes. But not as much so as everybody thinks.
Right. Not as much as they think.
Yeah.
In reality, mortgage rates are based on investors who are trading mortgage-backed securities.
Exactly.
And they respond positively or negatively all month long to reports that come out.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so...
And the interpretation of those reports.
Right.
Because sometimes I feel like it's not just what the numbers are in the reports, it's the understanding of the impact of that number. And not everybody's interpretation is always the same.
Correct. You're right. You're right. And some of them will disagree on, you know, what's going to come down the line after that report.
Yeah.
Right? So typically, overall, when the economy is not doing well, interest rates get better.
Right.
And when the economy is thriving, interest rates usually will go up. That doesn't always happen. That's the norm.
But that's the, yeah.
Right.
Typical.
So we have a lot going well in our economy right now. And the capture of the Venezuelan president will be an interesting one to see how that
what impact that has.
Yeah, with oil prices and our economy. You know, I want our economy to thrive, but I also want interest rates to go down. So that's a hard balance.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a give and take. So I feel the same way. And so I'm still hopeful that we can see some lower numbers. I mean, I would be really excited to see if we can get the interest rates into the fives this year. I feel like that would be a really sweet spot, in my opinion, for our industry.
Right. I do think, based on a lot of what I'm reading, is that we'll probably mostly stay about the same where we're at, like roughly sixes, but we might dip into the fives, the high fives, maybe the mid fives at some point in the year. My guess, if I had to put money on it, would be in the fall after we have a new Fed president and after some more economic reports come out and we see inflation. Now, the reason I still have a ton of home buyers buying that aren't waiting on rates, most of them are fatigued for waiting a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, when you have a no lending fee refinance, that gives them the ease to say, you know what, let's buy now, get a good deal on the price of the home, negotiate some seller credit, and then refi when rates drop. That's how you win on both sides.
Absolutely. Like, we were just having this conversation the other day that I feel like right now, because I've had several clients reach out and say, when do you think is a good time to buy? And I'm like, right now. It's a good time to buy right now. And but I say that with one, you know, caveat to that, in that I feel like don't just buy now to buy anything. If you find the house that you truly love, buy now. Don't wait. Because I feel like I've had so many clients that found that beautiful, perfect home for them, or at least in their minds, this could work perfectly. But they're like, but the interest rates are still a little high. I want to wait till they get lower. The problem is that home will be gone. And then moving forward, they can't ever find that home again. You know, it's the one that got away kind of thing. And then once they fell in love, they compare all the future homes to the one that they wish they'd bought. And so to me, you should buy when you find the right home.
Right. Agreed.
Whenever that is, you know, just get out there, look, and if you find it, buy it. Because over time, the appreciation on real estate in general, it's always going to be going up. If you look at the historical data, it shows that the, you know, it's always going to be inclining. Yes. How steeply it inclines, that changes, right, over time. But it's always going to be in an upward trajectory.
Correct. Real estate's one of the safest places to put your money.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I just feel like, you know, if anybody out there is on the fence, get off that fence. Yeah. Make it happen. Make it rain.
Best time to buy was yesterday.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. So true. So very true. Well, this has been so enlightening. And I do want to ask you one thing, though, before we go to the next segment, in that, what do you guys like to do in your fun time? Because off time, fun time, because I know you've done such interesting, crazy things for a living. So I want to know, what crazy things do you do in your off time?
Oh, I'm so boring now. We were fun. We had so much fun in our, you know, back when we were in our early 30s, I would say, you know, Blake and I did a lot of, we had a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Now,
I love it.
Now our kids are really fun ages. So our kids are 9 and 11, and our favorite thing to do is just hang out with them.
That's just cool.
Yeah, we just moved to this, beginning of this year, we moved to a new home, and there's umpteen things to do at our new house. Our backyard is like a playground. And we just spend a lot of time with the kids outside swimming, even in December.
Awesome.
Because it's hot here. And, you know, my son just got a BB gun. So we're playing, you know, teaching him that in the backyard. So we're just, family time has been huge. We were watching the Stranger Things.
Yes.
Like, we got upset. I don't know how many of y'all have watched that. But that came back with the season. And that was our Christmas Eve, New Year's plans. And then apparently tonight there might be potentially an actual real final episode. So that's kind of what we do right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very
cool. Just having fun with the kids and loving being parents.
Awesome. Yeah. Love it. Love to hear it. Yeah. Well, now we will start our next segment of the podcast, which is called Feral or Fabulous. So if you want to pick up your paddle, I'm going to hit you with a few topics and you're going to tell me whether you think it is feral or fabulous. black licorice.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. Disgusting, nasty, literally. There's so many gross things I would eat before I would eat black licorice.
Same.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we're very simpatico
so
in that regard.
Disgusting. Yeah. No. I even hate fennel because it reminds me.
No, same. 100%. No, I'm okay. Well, we're very like-minded in that regard. No, no black licorice. Although I will do some red licorice.
Sometimes like the Twizzlers has a strawberry flavor.
And I can hang with that and I can do a little bit of that. And even that I don't love it. But I do like it. I can have it, you know, now and again. But black, just the flavor is just not good.
Yeah.
So, okay. Superheroes. Awesome.
Yes,
awesome.
Especially
Avengers. If you have, especially since you have kids. I wondered if that would be a thing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So do you guys see all the superhero movies and all that stuff?
We did. They're kind of out of that phase now. My kids are savage. They want to watch scary dark movies. Uh-huh. My husband showed them John Wick when they were 7 and 8. That was, so they're a bit savage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's crazy.
No more superheroes.
Yeah. I love it. But no, very, very cool. Okay. Gardening.
Ooh, fabulous.
Okay.
I'm terrible. Can't do it.
But you enjoy it.
So herbs is what I've determined I can keep alive. Herbs.
And see, I love the idea of gardening. Like I would love to have a garden. Like I would love to have fresh herbs. And that to me just sounds like the most amazing thing. I hate it. Like literally the idea and digging in the dirt, other than Peter Gabriel in the song, I don't want to have anything to do with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do not want to dig these nails in any dirt.
Oh, good point. Yes. It'll get very dirty.
Yes. I mean, and I know you can wear gloves, but I don't know. I'm just not a gardening fan. So, but I love the idea. And I love to watch other people. Like I could watch you garden all day long and I could watch Martha Stewart and whoever else out there gardens. But, and I think the idea of a garden is fabulous, but just not me.
I just don't have the patience.
Yeah.
I love it. I can dig in the dirt. I don't mind planting them, but I don't have the patience to watch it grow.
Okay.
We bought all these trees that were supposed to produce fruit.
Yeah.
And we later found out it takes like 3 or 4 years. We're like, yeah, we just let them all die.
I totally get that. No, for sure. For sure. Okay. War movies.
Ooh, it's kind of depends on the movie.
You know what? I'm very similar to that. I'm curious to see what your explanation is.
If I watch it with Blake, my husband, then I love it because of his long background in Air Force and all the things
Absolutely.
He did, he gives me a good perspective.
Absolutely.
Of course, with Dave.
Yeah, with Dave. 27 years in the Army, obviously, you know, totally. I relate to what you're saying about that. Watching with him is a whole different perspective.
Right. He'll pause and be like, that's no, this is real. No, he'll go, you know, and
yes.
I'm like, okay, this is helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, totally, totally get that. And, but for me, as I've gotten older, I've had a hard time watching them because of the reality is I feel like when I watch a regular movie, I'm like, oh, but this didn't really happen. It's just make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be okay with that if somebody gets killed because it's like, oh, but it didn't really happen. But with war movies, most of the time it did really happen and it represents, you know, what's happened. And so for me, I get really sad. So for me, that's a little bit of the feral side of it. That is just a little,
I would agree with that. I don't like to be sad when I watch a movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, okay. Thunderstorms.
Fabulous.
Me too.
I will sit on the back porch and watch them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Me too. I love a good thunderstorm for sure.
Same.
And I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, they freak me out. But no, especially in San Antonio, because we can have some flooding and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
But I feel like I don't want to be out necessarily driving in one.
Right.
But I'd love to be at home watching one.
Same.
Or seeing one roll in, you know. I would love that.
And a whole new perspective now that we moved out to the country, because we're in Spring Branch now, and it thunderstorms out there really pretty because you can see
far. Because you've got a longer range of vision, I would think.
To see it rolling in from really far away.
Oh, how amazing. That's so cool. I love to hear that. No, I love it. I love it as well. Okay. Last one. Deep sea fishing.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to say fabulous.
Okay.
I've never done it.
Oh, okay.
Always wanted to. Almost did a couple of years ago.
Okay.
We ended up canceling that trip. But my husband used to be a deep sea diver. He was a commercial diver. Did you know that about Blake?
No.
Oh, Yeah, he was one of those crazy people that did the most dangerous job in the world.
No, he's like MacGyver. I mean, literally, is there anything that guy has not done?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, he's finished the bucket list.
That is crazy. That is so crazy.
But the fish that he has told me about that he saw that would go mess with him when he was down there, and really dolphins was the crazy thing that he told me was the most dangerous, which is wild. They'll grab their umbilical cord and rip a diver up and kill him, which is crazy. But yeah. Some of the fish he's described to me when he was, you know, he was mostly in the Gulf of Mexico, but I've always wanted to go deep sea diving.
Yeah.
Deep sea fishing.
Yes.
After he's described to me how it's actually really clear at the Gulf of Mexico if you take a charter out there. And I love fish.
Yeah.
I would have a lot of fun. Haven't done it.
Me too. Oh, someday. No. I grew up deep sea fishing. I absolutely love it. And we're going to have to go together. We're going to have to plan a trip and head to the coast. Because like I said, I love deep sea fishing. And Dave wasn't really that, you know, he wasn't that aware of it or into it. Yeah, he grew up fishing, but he was more of a freshwater, you know, fishing person. So now I love to go out in the ocean and go way far out and catch a sailfish or a marlin or something like that.
That's so cool that you've done that. I love that.
Well, cool.
You have to give me some tips.
Absolutely. We've got a plan for 2026 and beyond. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being here today as a guest on the Feral and Fabulous podcast. And we will see you guys all next time on the next episode. Take care. We'll be right back.